At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com. My ground
will be turned around. Welcome back, guys. DGS 1041 FM KMOX. Happy Tuesday. We have a pretty good rainstorm outside the KMOX window there. Kind of nice. Very August. Florida, right, just came back from.
Use the weather spotter skills to look at the app. It's a little tiny thing. It goes away.
You don't miss a time.
No, I'm going to flex on that every time, man.
It's an important part of his life.
Yeah. Well, it's the only thing you flex about, which is weird.
Yeah.
You have so many impressive things that you're always like, I'm a weather spotter. I don't know if you guys knew this or not. I know what a nimbocumulus cloud
is. I've also never used it once in real life.
You've never called in?
I have never called in.
You could do some great pranking.
Yeah, I could probably do that, but that's not the way it's supposed to be. I could prank Dave Murray.
I doubt it.
Probably a bad idea.
Live in studio, we have Cui Tran, who is the owner of Nudo House in My Lee, and it's a pleasure to meet you. We have a lot of mutual friends. Everyone talk really highly of you. You should know that.
Well, you know, I appreciate being on here and appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate coming on right after the Tom Petty intro. You know?
So you have an interesting story. I know a little bit of it, but for people who are just learning about you, tell them your story. I think it's interesting.
I mean, you know, it's the typical American story, right? It's the modern day Ellis Island, right? Yeah. It's just the country's built on immigration. And, you know, we just happen to be a different generation of immigrants. And, you know, my dad was a colonel, South Vietnamese Army, fought along the Americans. And, you know, we seeked asylum back in 78. We came here in 1980 and been in St. Louis since 1980. So I haven't looked back since.
Yeah. And you were pretty small when you guys came, right?
Yeah, I was 3 when we came here. And, you know, I think my brain is still at 3 years old.
But, yeah. Any snapshots of your life before? Anything
you
still
know,
there?
I'm really glad I didn't remember the journey. You know, it's a lot of craziness going on, a lot of death, a lot of illness. You know, it's a tough time. War is not a good time. And, you know, the things that they told me, what they saw in the refugee camps, you know, like it's just the journey, that kind of journey to leave everything behind and jump on. You can't even say you jumped on a boat because they jumped on a raft.
Wow.
With a, you know, 1-year-old kid and just somehow made it to shore somewhere.
Wow.
And, you know, we're grateful to be here. You know, I'm grateful to be alive and be here with you guys.
Yeah. Not to turn this into anything political, but Rach, you've made a comment like this before. I was born here, and so I'm an American and I'm proud of it. But when people come here, I feel like they have a little more buy-in. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, because it's not just like you're here by default.
Right.
Like it's.
I had no choice in the matter.
Right. Right.
Just happened, you know. Tell me about your parents.
So, you know, no one had more than a 5th grade education during that time. It just, you couldn't afford an education. And, you know, during that time, it was rough, right? Vietnam was, there was a lot of, you know, there was the French there, us there. You know, also fighting Russia and China, which, you know, someone that we don't have to get into history, but someone that was a CIA trained by us who, you know, got mad at us and then ended up aligning with, you know, China and Russia. And then the war happened. So it's, you know, unfortunately, you know, war is one of the worst things. And it's always the poor that suffer the most. Mm. And, you know, the wealthy gain the most during war. And so, you know, I'm always, you know, thinking of things like that and kind of like my history. Mm-hmm. You should always think before you put other people's lives at risk to, you know, for an agenda, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times we get it. Like if you're fighting like, you know, authoritarians or people that are committing genocide or, you know, we get it, right? You know, sometimes you can't talk to everybody. Sometimes people need a smack upside the head.
There you go.
And, you know, but also it's just it's a very delicate matter, and it's just something that we should always take into account with everything involved, you know. And so, you know, I know what it's like, and you know, you're right. I think, you know, America is an idea, right? It's not so much, you know. I think the culture of America is everyone. America is built on immigrants, right? The Irish, the Jewish, the Italians, you know, the Germans, the Chinese. So I think America to me is a culture, and it's a culture that involves a lot of different heritages, mm-hmm. you know, that was, so that's kind of like, and you know, if you believe in, you know, it's like, you know, I love my wife, you know, I believe in her, and I'm confident and secure enough to know that, you know, she's not going to sway and go somewhere else. So I think that if we believe in the American idea, that we should be secure enough that people like myself and my family will become Americans, love the country, and you know, and that's what it's about, and that's what it's always been about, you know, and that's why it's you know, it's okay to hang your Irish heritage flag and also be American. It should, you know, an Italian flag. I mean, it should be that way across the board. And, you know, that's what the country's about. And that's kind of like how I grew up. And that's, you know, how I've always felt.
Couldn't agree more. And really, if aliens came down and they're like, OK, tell me about Australia. Tell me about Canada. Tell me about the United States. To me, our story would be the most impressive. Like, we have people from all over the world who have come here and become one people. Like, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan said it before he left office, mm-hmm. right? He said that we're the only nation that anyone can come and be American. You know, sometimes, and, you know, I remember that growing up watching that speech because, you know, obviously Jimmy Carter started the bill to allow the refugees to, and obviously he lost to Ronald Reagan. And so Ronald Reagan ended up signing the bill that was started by Jimmy Carter to allow the refugees in. And so that's, you know, I think, you know, I hope we get back to that part of our humanity, you know, that people, if we believe in America this much, that, you know, people will come and people will become Americans. You know, it's the idea of America, you know, America is an idea. And, you know, we're the youngest country, and you know, you've seen what we've become and how we got here. And so I hope we continue that and, you know, reach out. Talk to people more and just kind of, you know, we all want the same things, you know, we, and so that's just something that, I hope, you know, kindness and empathy.
Yeah.
We have more of that moving forward.
Yeah. I wrote down my show sheet. I just got back from vacation. And one of the first things I wrote down was I wish we had a gentler nation, like, right. Like just take it easy, just settle down. And, you know, I'm older than you, but we're close enough in age. You remember before. It wasn't like this.
Right. I remember. I think, you know, and that's, I think that's, you know, my suggestion to the country, I think everybody just needs to sit down and have a bowl of pho. That usually helps.
Can't hurt.
It's never gone wrong for me.
Yeah, me neither. I've never gotten mad. Not a single time.
You know, I think if you're left or right or whatever, if you sit down and have a bowl of pho, you have some common ground. You know, I think, like I said, it doesn't matter where you go, but all of a sudden I'm coming in right after Tom Petty. It makes me pretty happy.
There
you know what I mean?
If you're wondering who this smart guy is, it's Chef Kui from Noodle House in Mildly. I found a quote from you that American food is immigrant food. Talk to me about that apropos of your restaurants.
Well, you know, if you really think about it, what is American cuisine? American cuisine is world cuisine, right? Because, you know, the if you look at like Italian food, for example, right? So during World War II, because America took the most Italian immigrants in, and then Argentina was the second, right? And so Argentina has its own style of pizza, has its own style of Italian food, and so do we, you know, because in Italy, they don't eat meatballs inside of their spaghetti.
Right.
But you know what? We had to do this to make it quick, so we put meatballs inside of our spaghetti, and that's a very American thing. Same with Cipino, right? The fishermen in San Francisco. That's why they call it fisherman's stew. But it was just something that, well, we whipped up, and there's really no such thing as Cipino in Italy. You know, that's a very American thing. And so our food here is very it's international, you know. American food is immigrant food, you know, and so it's just like the Chinese food here. Is there beef and broccoli in China? I don't think so, you know. There, you know, so it's it becomes the beautiful thing right now is like you, Kel, right? Everywhere I go, like we were fortunate enough to make the cover of Food and Wine magazine in 2018, and it wasn't so much that I was proud that it was me. I was proud that the February issue of 2018 was. The cover said American comfort food. Mm-hmm. And what was on that cover is a bowl of pho. And a bowl of pho is a Vietnamese heritage, but guess what? I'm an American, I'm cooking it here. So now that becomes part of our American heritage, you know? And so that's the beautiful thing about food. Food talks, you know, food and music, same situation, you know, comes from a tragedy. It comes from someone's pain, and that we create these things through it. And so, you know, part of the reason I love Italian food is because I grew up half of my time as a child on the Hill and the other half in La Clee Town. So if you guys know, it's two totally different dynamics. But food helped me, like as I was walking around the Hill, you know, I was like, oh, look, it's a cured meat. We also have this, you know, we have this. We make sausages too. So we have this. So that familiarity kind of helped me kind of be like, oh, okay, kind of understand the world a little better. And during the war, you know, I'm a huge rock fan. So during the war, you know, when we came to the States, all I was listening to was Led Zeppelin, you know, Scorpion, you know, I was listening to like, you know, all this rock, the Eagles. So I'm listening to all this rock. I didn't really understand it till about the second grade. But, you know, basically, you know, food, rock and roll, and Sesame Street helped me learn English. So
interesting. Do you still speak Vietnamese?
I speak fluent, yes.
Yeah. Have you been back?
You know, the last time I was back in Vietnam was 1997.
Wow.
Wow, that's wild.
And the craziest thing is it was like the movies, right? Because it was like 20, you know, you watch a scene and then it goes 20 years later. And so literally it was 20 years later. And my, you know, a lot of people don't know, but my father, he lived with the communists for like a year after the war ended because he could fake a northern dialect. So basically he was basically a spy doing intelligence. And so when they figured out who the hell he was, we had to
get out.
There's
had to move.
Either you die there or you die trying to go somewhere. And so, you know, that's kind of like our story. And it was kind of scary because that time my mother was like, she was very nervous that if they still had records or something, if they figured out who he was, then maybe, you know, he might be detained. He might be, because, you know, my grandfather was locked up in a camp for 10 years by the communists as well. And so, you know, it was a very scary time, but luckily, you know, it's a very different country now. And, you know, it's always like if you go somewhere, regardless of how you feel about the politics of the country, the people, they're completely different, you know. And so it's like you have friends here, you have Americans here of Iranian descent. You know, they give you stories of Iran and you're like, this is completely different than what, you know what I mean? And so it's always unfortunately the people suffer through the politics of you know certain countries. But
remember back in 1979 when I was 15 and the Iranian hostage situation was going on, and now I've become really good friends with one of the guys who was a hostage, and I was just a kid back then, but my parents were all into it. My two best friends were Iranian exchange students, so I got to know them and I got to know Iran through them, and that was so textured. As opposed to just like, oh, we friggin' hate Iranians, and you know, and they took so much crap, you know, just, oh my gosh, just walking through the school was terrible. Can you hang out one more?
Yeah, of course.
All right, we're here with Chef Kui from Noodle House in Miley. Quick break, right back, DGS.
One, back down.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates. From all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Live in studio, we have Chef Kui, owner of Noodle House in Miley.
Been talking a lot about life and politics and world history. Let's talk about food. Let's talk about the restaurants. So you literally grew up in this.
You know what? I had no choice. I think I came out of the womb with a dish rag. You know, so I think that's maybe a dish rag in one hand and, you know, a walk spoon in the other hand.
What are your earliest memories of it?
You know, it's crazy, right? We talk about the country and we talk about what can happen here. And it's just crazy to think that, you know, my parents started a business without even knowing how to speak English.
Yeah, that's impossible.
It's crazy. And then I, you know, at 8 years old, really started to... I should have never passed kindergarten or the first grade. I think they just felt sorry for me. Mm. Just passed because I really didn't really grasp the English language till towards like the second grade.
Yeah.
And I remember at 8 years old, it was just basically, hey, can you try to translate as much as possible? So I think, I really didn't like the restaurant business growing up just because I never had a life.
I gotcha, yeah.
You know, I never had a life. Everything was work. Everything was, you know, oh, look, Mom, I made the JV football team. Who cares?
You know? The dishwasher quit.
Yeah, you know, it's like, we need you to wipe tables. Yeah. I mean, I think that it helped me. There's things that you can't teach. And I think, part of it was really how to communicate, really understanding human nature and how to communicate with people. You know, deal with just all walks of life. And I mean, the people you meet, you know, I've been so fortunate to meet so many great people. And that's something that I don't regret, you know, and that's something I'm very grateful for.
Yeah. So for people who Vietnamese food is not monolithic, you know, yours is different from other places. But if they've not tried it, how would you describe it?
It's funny because I always tell people, I say, you know, it's like if you go to New Orleans, right? The food there consists of, you know, Cajun, Creole. So you have, you know, your Southern food, and then you have the, you know, the African slaves that have injected, you know, their food into it. And Vietnamese food, I always tell people, I said, there's a lot of familiarity because the French occupation brought so many different things, like pho, for example, which is hugely popular. So it's, you know, there's different variations, obviously the North and the South pho, but Southern pho is made with strictly beef bones and beef broth. And so, but the ancestral dish to that is pot au feu, which is a French stew, basically, a French, you know, that consists of like carrots and potatoes. So we just basically took it and we just created our own. And, you know, we have what's called like banh mi, right? So we have a sandwich. So no other Asian country makes an actual sandwich. So we actually make a baguette, you know, because of the French. So, but like other Southeast Asian cuisine, like Thai cuisine, like, you know, so like many other Southeast Asian cuisines, the flavors are very familiar to Southeast Asian flavors. So basically, I always tell people, when you eat Vietnamese food, there's always, it hits every note. So, you know, you got the salt, you got the sweet, you got the tart, and you got the spice. And so it's a very well-rounded cuisine. And I always tell people, I say, listen, we make beef just like we make shrimp. It's just a different variation of it. So, you know, and then we also use butter on certain things too. And that's because of the French, and a lot of Asian countries do not, you know? And so I always tell them that it's going to hit every note, and don't be afraid. Just jump in the pool. We got lifeguards. Don't worry.
Yeah, nice.
Jump in the pool. We got lifeguards everywhere.
What food, I started to say American food, but what food here in America did you love as a kid?
Growing up on the Hill, like, I love Italian food just because, obviously, at that time for me, it was very familiar. Oh, look, there's noodles, so pasta, you know what I mean? So, oh, there's red sauce. We use a lot of tomatoes in Southeast Asian cooking, you know? And so it was like, oh. So for me, I really loved Italian food, like, because you can cook Italian food the way you cook Asian food, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, throw it in, pop it, you know. And so it was very homey to me. And now, obviously, as you get older and as you experience the world a little bit more, I mean, I love all cuisines. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a cuisine that I don't love and want to explore because I can really feel someone's culture in that food. And so it opens you up. You know, that's what Anthony Bourdain said, you know, it's like, get a cold beer, go sit by yourself at the bar, you know, go eat this. So he, you know, someone like him was so important because it made the world so much smaller. It made us Amen. Less scared.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nothing to be fearful of.
Yeah. That's great. That's Chef Kui from Noodle House in My Lee. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. DJ S on KMOX. Ricky Horton is taking a little bit of time off. Scott Terry, former Cardinal pitcher and friend of the show, is filling in. Scott, thank you. Great to talk to you again.
Hey, for me to fill in for Ricky Horton, what an honor and a privilege. But not only that, to be on the Dave Glover show. Are you kidding me?
It's a twofer, man.
Scott, is this your first career pinch hitting performance?
Yeah, Scott's first
pinch hitting. No, you know better than that, Kevin. You know back in the day I actually got to pinch hit a little bit.
Yeah. Yep, I've heard the story.
I was one of those pitchers that could actually hit on occasion.
Do you miss that about the game, Scott? Like, are you acceptor of the DH and it's all good?
I mean, I'm an acceptor of it. It's going to be what it is. I understand the benefit of it. But to play the game the way that we played it with the pitcher, you know, a lot more strategizing. You had to use a lot more bench players, you know, and the idea that a pitcher can actually help himself on occasion. You know, we had one of the better hitters when I played in Bob Forsch.
Yeah.
And so we had some guys that could do a little bit of damage and that could certainly move runners over, and it just created a different style of play.
Boy, I know it's the same game. I just finished watching the first time the Ken Burns baseball doc. I know it's the same game that's been played all this time, but your era, which is my era of fandom, it seems so different than today. Is it that much different to you, Scott?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, just the whole idea, the preparation, the aspect of the game from a strategy standpoint, the criteria of the players and what you're looking for and what you're asking them to do in certain situations, even the language of it has changed a lot. So it is a different game. We know the fundamentals. You got to hit it. You got to catch it. You got to throw it. You know, you got to run. We know those will always be in place, but a lot of the other aspects of it have changed.
So all the analytics we have now, and especially, you know, with pitching, do you wish you would have had that back in your day, or do you kind of roll your eyes at it a little bit?
Well, I think we had it to a certain degree, but not near to the detail or the technology of it. I mean, I used to keep a book, so I knew what Bip Roberts, as an example, did against me, the leadoff hitter for San Diego. I knew what he did every at bat. I knew what the count was when I hit, you know, what he hit and where he hit it. And I did that on my own. You know, you remembered things. You went to other guys in reference to how do you pitch this guy? What is he good with? You know, where can I throw a fastball on a 3-1 count and he can't hurt me? We did chart. We actually had to do them ourselves. I can remember sitting behind home plate at Busch Stadium and charting every pitch and putting a dotted line when it was a ground ball and a solid line when it was a line drive. And we kept charts on every hitter. We kept charts for every pitcher against the hitter. So we had a lot of that. We just didn't have the, six or eight guys that are in the other room doing it for you.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, doing it by hand was a lot. You know, we used to joke, Scott, you were around Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan a lot. And it was a lot of their time was during your playing days. And then, of course, their time here was a little after that. But we used to joke that Dave Duncan was essentially his own analytics department. He had the big trunk with all the notebooks and the different color-coded things. And, like, that level has always been there. But, you know, with computers and the ability to take 10 seasons worth of data and throw it in together, not just when you face them, but when everybody faces that hitter or pitcher, is what we're looking at now.
Yeah, I mean, we had a big, thick book. Mike Rourke was our pitching coach, and he was very good with all that stuff as well. And a pitching coach being a catcher, to me, it seemed like they had a little different way of going about things. Mike Rourke had a catching background, just like Dave Duncan did. And so they had a better idea and a better way of what they felt like was important in reference to the information and the data that you needed to keep. We would have our team meeting prior to a series, and it would be the whole team. And, you know, we would go into a series, and every hitter was a fastball hitter. And so I would just kind of, at the end of the meeting, said, well, I guess I'm not pitching this series. And we would just settle about it because I was a fastball pitcher. But then you understand and you know the idea of actually pitching instead of just out there and throwing.
Scott, anytime we have someone on from, by the way, we're talking to Scott Terry here. Anytime we have someone on from the Whitey era, I have to talk to him about Whitey. A few legends these days, but he's certainly one of them in St. Louis. What was your personal relationship with Whitey like?
It was great. The very first day that I got to the Cardinals, I walked in the locker room, and our equipment guy at the time, Buddy Bates, just told me Whitey wants to see you in his office. I walked in his office. He said, Scott Terry, sit down. I've been trying to get you for 3 years. Here's what you're going to do.
That's awesome.
And this is what we know you can do for us. And welcome here. And I know you're gonna do well for us. And so, I mean, it's very simple to be able to understand that. And he was a father figure for me. I call him my baseball dad. But he was also just a great man and an easy man to talk to with an open door. Now, a lot of people can say they have an open door policy, but a lot of people don't want to walk through the door.
Yeah.
But with Whitey, it was real easy to walk through the door. And he just made a point of always, you know, coming around at some point in time and, hey, how's it going? And he would always ask about the family. He would always ask about the off-field stuff as well as on the field.
It's a fascinating thing, Scott, because what we all see, we being all of us that are on the outside, not in a clubhouse, not on a team, we see decisions, right? We see he put on a bunt play here, or he used this reliever there and not that one. Like, that's what we see. But what you're describing is so much more just managing the human beings and managing the people so that you can get the best out of each guy.
And I think, Kevin, that's what Whitey was the best at. And I think every player that ever played for him would tell you that he is not going to put somebody into a situation where he knows that they can't be successful. He's going to give you your best opportunity of success as well as your team, you know, as well as the organization. And when you play it that way, everybody benefits from it.
Scott, I make this personal. I just this summer started playing baseball again after 30 years off playing in a 60 and over league, and it's partially your fault. Wheels and I came out to Busch Stadium last year and did a little mini camp with you, and just standing, I'd never been on the field before, just standing at shortstop and then taking a grounder and catching it, I'm like, I'm in. I'm all back in. So I'm in the world to pull hamstrings, and, you know, it's just been so great.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what hurts, and then I figured probably everything.
everything hurts.
But, you know, Dave, if you would have told me that right when you started, we could have had you out to one of our kids' clinics. We would have put you in a group of 12-year-olds, and you would have done outstanding. We would have taught you grips on ball, ground ball positioning, fly balls, hitting off we would have got you ready, Dave. I'm telling you.
I tell you what, I could use it. I could use it. The first fly ball I saw, I'm just like, I'm not even close.
I'm not going to lie, man. Knowing Dave as long as I've known Dave and Scott's, having seen you do lessons and do camps for, I don't know, now 15, almost, you know, 18 years, I would love to see you tell Dave Glover, we can keep doing this your way and getting this result, or you can do this my way and get the good result.
Yeah, I'd probably look at Dave and I'd say, do you not understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Oh, trust me. I was sufficiently intimidated just being out there a little bit. I'm very coachable.
I can just tell you, Dave, there is no look like the look that a 15-year-old pitcher gives Scott Terry.
Yeah.
When Scott's trying to explain something to him. And the kid gets it, but he's not doing it, and he doesn't know why he's not doing it. It is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny, though, who was it I was talking to the other day? I don't remember. It was a player. Ted Simmons. Uh-huh. He told me that he wished that he had the look that I look. He said, I would just love to have your look. And my kids used to always say, Dad, give him the look. Give him the look. And so I know what you're saying, Kevin, and it's really I don't know where it came from. I guess it's just a gift.
Yeah.
I'm cursed with it.
You can thank Papa Terry, right?
Stop, Well, I can stop some people in their tracks, and I can get them where they've got nothing to and that's it.
Yeah.
So
I've seen you do that to grown men.
For some reason, I'm intimidating. Although no, I'm just a little guy.
Yeah, that's a lot of what fantasy camp ends up being, especially the big one down in Jupiter, Scott, when it's the morning meeting. Do not want to be on the other end of Scott's scouting report on you. Not that I ever did.
You know, and not just me, but also a lot of other people, too. Because when you get on that list, you might... Well, we ask you to stand. Actually, we don't do this anymore.
Oh.
Because we're not allowed. But anyway, we won't go into that. But actually, we would have somebody stand, and then they would be standing for a while.
Yeah.
And we would just kind of go down the row, and everybody would have something. But it was hilarious. We had a lot of fun with it. And we still do. We still do fantasy camps, and we have a great time with them. Matter of fact, we're going to be up at the Field of Dreams in September.
Oh, wow. That's great.
That's cool.
That's super cool.
That's going to be all. So when did you say that?
Yeah, we're
going to
have a four. That's September. I think we do 20th through the 24th, okay. Something like that. And we have four teams. We'll have a round-robin tournament, and each team will, you know, get to play each other. We'll have a tryout the first day. We'll after the tryout, we'll have a draft, and we'll have our four teams play each other, and then we'll have a championship game, and we'll crown the winner. We give them a ring. I mean, the whole nine yards.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
That's great. Scott, always great to talk to you. I think we're talking to you later on in the week, so thank you very much. We appreciate it.
That's great. Thanks for having me, guys.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 251. Got some weather out there. Michael, do you have anything to talk about on the weather?
Yeah, we've got a flood advisory that's just been issued by the National Weather Service. They're talking about urban area and small stream flooding. People are usually aware if they've got a stream near their house or if a road tends to flood. This is in effect until 5:45. It's for much of the metro, Madison, St. Clair, Illinois, St. Charles, St. Louis City, St. Louis County in Missouri. Till 5:45, low-lying, poor drainage areas. This thunderstorm has already dropped about 2 inches of rain. Additional rainfall amounts of up to an inch are expected between now and 5:45. And so from St. Louis to Granite City, Edwardsville to Bell Fountain Neighbors, Wood River to Madison and Cahokia Parks Airport, Spanish Lake, Fairmount City, some of the cities they list. But a flood advisory in effect till 5:45.
Thank you. This is not scientific, but it was crazy here.
It was like a car wash.
Yes.
Came out of nowhere. I know I've said that off the air like 7 times, but I mean, that's what happened. You look outside and it's like, oh, okay, I guess this is happening.
My dad would say it's coming down like it's being poured out of a boot.
Have you ever seen the rain like coming across a field or something?
Yeah,
I've
that's
only,
cool.
I only saw it once when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember being like dumbstruck by how cool it looked. And then my dad's like, come on, get inside. You're going to get rained on.
So in Darden Prairie, we have like a 20-acre lake that the house is on. And Phoebe and I still talk about it. She was pretty little. And we were sitting in the gazebo. And we saw a wall of rain come across the lake. And it was just so cool. And we didn't even say anything. We both just went like, whoa. Like, we knew, like, that was really cool. That was neat. Where I grew up in South Roxana, the house was the farthest south house. And it overlooked about a 500-acre field. And, man, you could really see the weather coming in. And and when they would plant wheat, I would go out there and make a crop circle. And just...
It was you.
It was me. Yeah, I was the original crop circle maker. I would get in trouble and I'd go out there. They couldn't find me. I mean, it was a big wheat field.
It's like, I'm sending signals.
Yeah. Good show so far.
It's been a great show. It's not even 3 o'clock yet. Look at all that we stuffed into 2 hours.
It should be enough.
I have an idea.
What do you people want?
Let's just play it again.
Yeah, we had Jeff Quee, we had Scott Terry.
Yeah, pretty good back-to-back there.
That's all you people deserve. Come on, it's Tuesday.
Any more than that, it should be Friday.
I'm excited about the think tank today, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's Braxton Payne and Kurt Barr. I like those guys.
Two good guys.
Going to be a fun discussion, I'm sure. Dave Murray's weather, of course.
Speaking of friends of the show, Avi Loeb is making news again. Our friend who's the head of astronomy at Harvard. He says, start the countdown. We have 116 days until we know whether aliens are real because the new interstellar object is heading toward Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it will reach its closest point, which Avi is a great showman.
Yeah.
Because he uses science to titillate. And he's saying that its trajectory is on exactly the course he would set if it were going to release a probe onto Earth.
Like if it was going to skim the solar system, right? That's kind of the approach angle.
Yes.
Is that it's going to go like almost like lengthwise across the solar system. So if you were going to see what's up, that's what you would do.
So 116 days.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, I say bring it on.
What do you say,
bring
yes or no? It. At this point, why not, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Just hopefully they're nice.
Yeah.
I don't need face eaters. No face eating aliens.
Good.